It's Tuesday, the 17th of March, 2009. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm your host, Hereward Fenton. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at war. We are at war with ignorance. And it's our goal at TNRA to destroy once and for all the ignorance that clouds us and obstructs us and stops us from being who we can really be. So please join with us in this journey and this struggle to free ourselves and our society from ignorance. Tonight, a tale of two truth movements. Yes, two truth movements. There's the old truth movement, born out of the 9/11 investigation and the failures thereof. And there's the new truth movement, a conglomeration of new age ideas, speculations, and some would say irrational fantasies. I'll be discussing some of these ideas with my frequent guest, Dan Collins. And later on in the show, I'll be joined by Josh Jackson. So sit back, fasten your seatbelt, and get ready for a wild ride. Hello, Dan Collins. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Dan, a tale of two truth movements. What's your take on all this? Where do you see it? Where do you see us headed?
Sorry?
Where do you see us headed?
I thought about the topic, and the idea of two truth movements has been an ongoing controversy for some time. We've been having continual controversies in our groups about exactly what comprises the truth movement, what's the scope of our investigations.
There's been a lot of diversions and a lot of different tracks that people have been down just within the actual 9/11 truth movement. That's absolutely true.
Sure. We've had Illuminati symbolism, the Masons, Illuminati symbolism in film and art, and we've been having this, conversation for a while.
What seems to be happening now is that, at least in Australia, as far as I can see, as the dawning of awareness that things are not as they seem has occurred, there is also a lot of people are spinning off wildly in different directions to grasp at solutions, whether they be, spiritual solutions, utopian solutions, purely imaginative ones, or things that they just don't even really know what they are, but it's just sort of a grasping. There is this concept of a truth movement now, which doesn't actually apply to any individual set of statements or set of, questions or an investigation of any particular kind. It's very hard to talk about it because it's really like talking about something that you can't define. And so it's a very frustrating thing to try and grab hold of. It's very slippery.
Conspiracy theory.
Well, yeah, there is this broad concept that we've had in our society for a few decades now of conspiracy theory. And, with the dawn of the internet, a lot of that which had already existed in, book form and, on the talk show circuits or on the, fringe circuit of media moved into the internet in a big way. And, you've had, AboveTopSecret.com and, Conspiracy Central and sites, that focus on all kinds of hidden knowledge for a long time. Prior to 9/11, all those things existed. And, within that, there's a lot of different things to that would be falling into that grab bag. It's really only defined by the fact that it doesn't exist on, say, the mainstream news. Although even that can't be said as an absolute. Occasionally you will find one of these topics suddenly popping into the mainstream news. You'll find something about UFOs in the newspaper, It's a frustrating topic we have tonight, and I don't expect that we're going to get anywhere with it, to be honestly. I just think that it's one of these things that it's a social phenomenon. I see it happening, and I have people telling me about it. I have people telling me that the friends that they know that used to be very interested in investigating factual stuff about 9/11 are now sort of drifting off into speculations about all kinds of matters. And, you know, sometimes people are getting frustrated by that.
Like, by the way, I mean, since, you know, I've been involved in truth investigations for some years, and I can't say that, like, all of this has been bad. I mean, there's a lot of things that have been dug up on the way that I found, you know, quite an eye-opener.
Okay.
I mean, like, I've investigated, you know, along the way, connected with the war, you know, the 9/11 war. This was the opium trade in Afghanistan and the, you know, the hijinks in the oil business and, you know, a lot of things, you know, weren't in the mainstream media and, you know.
And all really important stuff. I mean, all stuff that needs to be looked at and, you know, suppressed.
You mean it is suppressed?
Well, it appears to be. I mean, you know, we have, I mean, by my criteria and by the criteria of a few people that I work with, like Josh and probably John Bursell and probably your good self, there are, you know, certain lines of investigation which have solid facts behind them, or the promise of solid information that's been gleaned through good investigative research. But then there are other subject areas that appear to be full of kind of hoaxes and hoaxsters, you know, people who come on to YouTube and tell you, spin you some yarn that then you know it just seems ridiculous, and they kind of give themselves away as being on some kind of hoax, and you know this occurs in parallel with other stuff which is actually really interesting and solid.
Well, I was thinking about the topic you mentioned, and I was just thinking, there's a parallel way of thinking. It seems to be a parallel sort of way of thinking involved. It's kind of like what we would call sophistical reasoning, and not like a systematic, you know, careful, like logical systematic way of thinking with rules, but, you know, a very sophistical way of thinking. You know, the sophists were this other school of logicians and legal practitioners in the days and time of you know, Aristotle and Plato. There's a funny joke they said about they made a mockery of the syllogism by saying, you know, this dog is a father, you know, it is yours, you know, therefore, you know, the dog is you know, Aristotle's father.
Yeah, right, yeah. A false syllogism.
Well, yeah, a sophistical sort of, it's sort of tolerable because it's funny.
A table has four legs, a dog has four legs, therefore a table is a dog.
You know, or something like that, you know, it's sort of like, it's funny, you know.
Right, so they were aware that there was something sort of naughty about it. And so there was a bit of tongue-in-cheek going on there?
Yeah, well, sophistries. I mean, sophistries are like, you know, because in the Greek, you know, tradition, ancient tradition, they much admired people who could find, you know, dazzling arguments and win, you know, lost causes in court and that kind of thing by using, you know, sophistry.
Well, you know, that point is really important. However, there's another aspect to this which I find, you know, in my kind of exploration of this, you know, what I'm calling the new truth movement, is that, yes, that there is that sort of soft logic aspect to some of the things that that you'll find proposed. But and we're gonna give you an example of one of those in a moment. I'm going to play an example from one of these UFO guys. But then there's also the people that really are coming from what they call a spiritual perspective, and I've had people tell me, for example, with the concept of, like, you know, dare I say it, reptilians, that this exists on a spiritual plane, and that you need to understand it from a spiritual level to understand that it really is real, that it's not just about a physical thing. And so the conversation then veers into your willingness to accept a non-corporeal domain of reality, and that's why that's why it's spiritual. I mean, how do you but this sort of non-corporeal spiritual kind of description of events then often merges back into an empirical style of description, where you'll find someone's actually saying, well, you know, I sat down with the alien and he gave me a cup of tea. You know what I mean? But then it goes and it veers back and it seems to waft back and forth between the physical empirical domain and the purely transcendental non-corporeal domain.
Sure. You might have heard of Immanuel Kant's rejection of metaphysics, and I think this is the sort of thing, that kind of way of talking. It was, you know, very popular in amongst, you know, theologians and scholars in the Middle Ages, that sort of way of talking, you know, and you get the Kant's rejection of metaphysics because it's just, you know, all mumbo jumbo, you know.
Sure.
But the point I'm trying to make is some people like it because it's just a bit of a trip, but you know, that's why people like Eric von Däniken seem so successful, because they just, you know, they're offering a kind of,
sure, the chariots of the gods, yeah.
A bit of an escape, a mental escape, you know, for someone, you know, after a long day at work. But
we could make the same arguments about religion for many people, indeed, couldn't we? We could say that people who obsessively read the Bible are getting a little bit carried away on a trip of some kind. I mean, would you give credence to that kind of?
Well, it's certainly possible. I mean, it's certainly.
We could say
you could argue it's happened in the past quite a lot, but
I guess all I'm saying is that this tendency, and we could even say, well, some people get involved in, you know, stamp collection to that level, or some scientists get so caught up in their experiments that they just, you know, lose track of what they're doing, and, you know, possibly lose track of reality thereby. Even in the name of science, this can happen. And I think there's plenty of good examples of that, you know, in the last few decades. So again, like, you know, what we're doing now is not really about answering the question and coming to some nice crisp, you know, explanation. I'm groping in the dark. I'm trying to figure out what's going on here.
Can I just mention, yeah, by the way, it's a common thing I've noticed amongst kind of what we call conspiracy theories is, I mean, there's a common theme in a lot of them I've noticed is this, there seems to be this kind of automatic assumption that if the government can do a certain thing, if it's like technically feasible for the government to do a certain thing, therefore they must have done it.
Yeah, that's quite common, yeah.
Like the chemtrails, I mean, it's perfectly,
sure,
technically possible for the government to spray poisons on the cities. I mean,
yeah, it could be done. You could put stuff into the jet fuel and you could do it. Yeah, the whole thing then hinges on, do we have real evidence to say that it's happening? And the whole argument hinges on people basically looking up in the sky and seeing this white, you know, perfectly white kind of line in the sky behind a plane and going, oh my God, you know, it's really happening.
But I mean, it sort of seems to be that if you can prove that it's not impossible, then it's possible. If it's possible, they must have done it. You know, you see, like I said, they could have faked the landings on the moon. You know, they could have sprayed, you know, could, you know, they could have built a huge, radar station to affect weather on the other side of the planet. You know, I mean, they sort of, like these, they seem to be, these conspiracy type things seem to be hinging on whether it's possible, and if it's possible, then they must have done it. And like this sort of thinking, conspiracy thinking, you know, comes into 911 truth a lot.
I think it does. I think it comes into any situation where you feel very uncertain and a little bit afraid, and a little bit, angry too, because, you know, you want justice.
Well, it's like a court case, in a modern court case, like a criminal trial, very often you see, the tactics of a prosecutor, a government prosecutor, seem to be like just to destroy the character of the defendant by bringing up irrelevant things from their past to prove that they are a person of criminal mind, a criminal background, All they need to do is find one instance, and therefore they are a person of criminal tendencies, therefore they must have committed the crime, They try to take advantage of this sort of funny way of thinking, you can smear someone's personality, and therefore they are capable of committing a crime, therefore they must have committed the crime,
Sure, sure.
In a lot of court cases, you see this other, the defense takes a similar strategy where they try to establish that, the defendant was in London at the time of the crime, which happened in Paris or something, even like he cannot have committed it,
actually takes me back to something we were discussing earlier off mic, where we're talking about the Sherlock Holmes principle, and that when you ruled out everything that's impossible, you're left with the only possible solution. So and that does actually have, some strength to it as an approach. If you can rule out all the impossible things, eventually you are left with, hopefully, what must have happened. Well, but the problem is there are a lot of things you've got to rule out, aren't there? I mean, you've got to.
But that actual statement is a direct translation of John Stuart Mill's Method of Residues, and he talked about in his book, System of Logic, but that actual statement is like his what he calls the method of residues,
right?
Which I only mentioned because I think Conan Doyle wrote all the Sherlock Holmes books to popularize Mill's sort of ideas. But anyway,
right. So, I mean, if we would say to apply that approach to chemtrails, for example, and I'm assuming that our audience is familiar with these things we're talking about. If not, please Google chemtrails. It won't take you very long to find out what that subject is about. But if you were to apply this theory or approach, dictum, whatever you want to call it, to chemtrails, you would have to rule out what it couldn't be, wouldn't you? You'd have to rule out the possibility that it is just temperature and humidity. I don't think they've ever successfully ruled that out, and that's why I don't subscribe to chemtrail, theories, because I just don't think it's been effectively ruled out that the chemtrail phenomenon is not caused by some very normal atmospheric events. And recently I found some sites that had some really excellent World War II photographs of chemtrails, in 1941. And they were actually planes fighting in the war, doing dogfights. And these planes would go up to really high altitudes and they would dive down again. And because they were going through a lot of different altitudes, they would sometimes create these contrails. And it was basically to do with, the temperature and all these factors. And you see exactly the same thing that is called chemtrails now in a lot of photographs from that time. And, I mean, that to me really, if someone can't explain that to me, then if someone can't explain that within the context of chemtrail theory, then it's over as far as I'm concerned. There's no point in going down that path any further. It seems like a waste of time.
Well, sure. I mean, something that's sort of, something with no sort of hard evidence, it seems like speculative, and you'd think it's sort of out of scope of 9-1-1 truth, because it's sort of a...
Well, to the extent that 9-1-1 truth is what we call a scientific empirical endeavor, but then again, as I led with this show, that there is a new concept of a truth movement, with 9-11 sort of stripped off the end of it. So it's just truth movement on its own, and that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. In fact, on a website that goes by that name, there is a statement that says, and this is our truthmovementaustralia.com.au, and we might actually get the webmaster of that site on the show, and I'm be quite interested to get him on to the show to talk about this. But on that site, it actually says, you know, this site is about you finding out what the truth is for you. It's so it's now the truth is the truth for you. It's not like the truth. It's a subjective and experiential thing. And I guess, you know, if chemtrails are real for you, then they're real. But the funny thing is that at the same time as that, you often see the same people who are saying that presenting information as if it must be factual as well. You know, third party, you know, reality. You know, it exists out there in the real world. You know, and I want to play a little clip from this UFO guy just to illustrate that, and to really illustrate the level to which some of this goes. I mean, just have a quick listen to this. It's from a YouTube video. Project Camelot interviews Dan Burrish, and I'm just going to play a small snippet. Here we go.
What is the T9 conference?
During the course of speaking with extraterrestrials and our interactions with them from the 1950s onward, there have been a series of treaties established between we and they. They meaning a future human intelligence, time travelers. And there have been as a consequence of our relationship with them, there have been more than one treaty system in place. During the last of one of those treaty negotiation and signing times, I had the privilege of being in the presence of the negotiators at the conference, which was held in the state of New Mexico.
And there were how many aliens present at that time?
There were 2, 4, 6, and a few in the strollers behind the curtains. So we had
a few in stroll. I'm sorry. What was that reference?
They're unable to cope for long periods of time in our atmosphere, present atmosphere. They've adapted, if you will, to the atmospheres of their particular future timeline, and as a consequence, coming here would be oppressive to them, existing in our standard temperature and our pressure. So they have been provided unique sealed off pressurized systems that they would be moved around in by their attendants, basically on a Segway type transport system, where you can push it and it will actually move forward. Very easily maneuverable.
I see. So that's what you meant by stroller system.
Right. Okay. And so they were encapsulated in their strollers and their positions as negotiators for their time. And
are you saying that these aliens that were present at this conference that happened, what, this year, last year?
A couple years ago.
In which they discussed, I'm assuming,
between
the Lotus...
Between 2003 and 2004.
I'm sorry?
Between 2003 and 2004.
Okay, and they discussed the Lotus Project.
It was brought up, and in fact, as part of the negotiations, the P plus 45,000 group of J-Rods wanted the codes for the Lotus Principle added into the treaty negotiations so that they could use it in their own attempts to ameliorate their particular neuropathies.
Wow, so they saw the value.
Okay, I decided to just stop it there. This interview goes on for a very long time. You know, I think we've got a flavor of what Dan Burrish is kind of saying there. It's very in your face, very, literal, empirical. You know, he's not talking about some altered plane of reality. He's really talking about, you know, the aliens were there and they were in their special contraptions that allow them to breathe, and they have treaties, and so, like, he's making it very much a concrete thing. Now okay, so this guy, and you'll find people saying, well, this guy's just a complete hoax, and that's on the YouTube page. You can Google it yourself. Project Camelot interviews Dan Burrish, part one. Well, I mean, I'd say most likely he's a complete hoaxster, because I've actually listened to a bit more. Sorry, Dan. I've listened to a bit more of what he says, and I've noticed that when he gets into his story, he goes through a whole bunch of total cliches about, he says there are greys, he talks about greys, he talks about the anatomical experiments, and he even talks about how he was abducted as a child, you know. So he seems to play into all of the classic themes of UFO stuff while claiming as well to be a scientist and a microbiologist who was working on some top secret government project. Again, you know, I offer this as an example of, you know, nothing that we can really, I don't think, get a productive viewpoint from, merely as a point in question. And it's very baffling. You know, obviously he's a real person. He exists. He's sitting there. He's giving this interview. He looks very sincere. But we really do have to assume here without, because there's really no way of corroborating anything he's saying. So again, you know, the Sherlock Holmes principle comes in, doesn't it?
Well, he corroborates with a lot of Hollywood movies, you mean? Or?
Well, he corroborates again with themes. Yeah, he corroborates with themes.
Hollywood, which, testimony.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess it sounds a bit... I mean, I think if young people listen to that kind of thing these days, they're at a bit of a loss because they never saw the movie that that he's lifting this stuff straight out of, you know.
Yeah, there could be some lapses there, possibly, yeah.
I mean, they're at a bit of a disadvantage because they don't know the background. I mean, you know, like David Icke, I mean, some of the things he says, I mean... You know,
well,
like,
interestingly, in this interview, they get reptilians in as well. And he goes on a little detour about reptilians. And he goes into a lot of detail about it, you know.
I've seen a lot of film. I've seen the movies that David Icke, you know, getting the stuff out of, you know.
Yeah, well, Alien, I don't know.
You know, the
original Alien.
Aliens visiting and, you know, they look like people, but they're actually lizard men. And,
yeah.
You know, and they're coming down to Earth and setting up treaties and discussions. And
yeah, there's been a lot of that, hasn't there? A lot of science fiction movies going back to the 50s that involved that. I think The Day the World Stood Still had a bit of that in it, didn't it? I know there's been a remake of that recently.
But the lizard men, that was back in the 80s, and you know, there was a rash of them in the 90s, you know, with it was popular for a while. Independence Day was sort of like a culmination of it all.
Yeah, well, you know, again, like this example here is just an example of where it seems that, you know, on the one hand, we have this theme of like self-discovery, you know, spiritual realities, which we have to accept because obviously they're not part of the material world, so we can't really question them. But then we have discussions of things which the person is claiming actually physically happened. But then there's a bit of blurring there because in Dan Burrish's interview, he actually talks a lot about his internal emotional states. And because he gets into his childhood somehow, it somehow veers into a discussion of his childhood. And he talks about the problems he had with his parents, and he doesn't know if his parents are his real parents. And he talks about his grandfather trying to rescue him from the aliens who abducted him when he was about 6 years old. And then he goes into this sort of quite surreal description of being on one of their spaceships. But it seems quite clear that what he's describing is kind of an internal emotional journey as well.
Well, people are very creative. I mean, it sounds like he's enjoying himself, spinning a tail and just...
Yeah, yeah.
To just sit wide-eyed in wonder. I mean, he's not the first.
And he won't be the last. I mean, you know, let's not get stuck in the spaceship kind of concepts, because I mean, that's just there. You know, I mean, we could talk about HAARP. You know, a lot of people want to talk about HAARP whenever they see something amazing happen, that, you know, whether it's an earthquake or a bushfire, or they think, oh, it might have been HAARP. You know, and again, that comes back down to some ideas. I think that, well, we know that there is this research station called HAARP that exists in Alaska somewhere. And we know that they were mucking around with ionosphere. Therefore, you know, they could be doing almost anything. Yeah.
I mean, there is very long wave radio communication with submarines. It talks to submarines on the other side of the world. But
yeah,
that's a fairly prosaic military application of technology. I mean, it's
Again, it's not to say that we know, you know, what's true and what isn't. You know, we are very ignorant. You know, and as I said at the beginning of this show, our goal is to destroy that ignorance. You know, as much as we can. I kind of go with the scientific approach, which is to say, well, let's focus on what we can focus on, and you know, let's not step into territory where we'll just be continually ignorant because all we'll be doing is speculating. Let's try and limit it.
All we've been doing is going over old ground that's been gone over, you know, since time again. You know,
yeah,
recorded history. I mean, people have been arguing about, you know, this kind of thing. You know, spirituality and, you know, intuition and the boundary between, you know, knowledge and intuition. And,
One of the things that some of us feel about this, one of the kind of end results of this way of thinking, this kind of internalized kind of like passive kind of approach, is that it stops people from taking action to bring about change, because it seems to be passive. You know, it seems to have a tendency to go inward, a tendency for everyone to say, well, you find your own truth, and then everyone becomes disengaged. And so the chance of building a movement to deal with an issue starts to dwindle. But we do have movements built up to deal with issues. You know, we've got certain movements for, you know, we've got an anti-GMO movement. We've got anti-vaccination groups. We've got a 9/11 truth movement, you know, and those are certainly real. You know, they really exist. But we do find that there's this tendency, and we wonder sometimes whether that might be orchestrated or co-opted as a deliberate disinformation campaign. And, you know, that has been proposed, and I'm on the fence. I don't know. It may have been concocted as a way of distracting people, and possibly, you know, these themes were invented all that time ago for that very purpose, or maybe not. Maybe it just evolved that way.
Well, I mean, I know people who say a lecturer in theology who is of the opinion that aliens and that kind of thing are just a form of theodicy, which is, you know, a way of talking about God, but in another kind of, in a kind of, you know, a way of talking about God and spirituality in a way, you know, sort of in a kind of artistic kind of, you know, analogical sense. Theodicy, you know. The aliens are angels and good angels and bad angels. You know, you see what I'm saying? Like,
Yes. A theodicy.
Well, not odyssey, but Theodicean. It's the Greek verb to talk, you know. It's become theodicy, you know.
And yet that whole kind of direction seems to be one in which there doesn't seem to be a prospect of, demonstration. You know, I mean, are we going to get out on the street with placards and say, you know, we want the reptilians out of, you know, Buckingham Palace because, you know, they shouldn't be in there.
Out
with the reptilians. I mean, because if it did get to that point, I would be, you know, at least it would be amusing, but it would also mean at least, well, they're doing something about it, you know. I mean, I'd like to see the chemtrail thing as well come to that point, you know. We want to stop the jet trails, you know, and then get out there on the street and point up to the sky, you know, show people, you know, because it just has to meet that test, you know. It has to get its teeth into something outside the people who just talk about it all the time. But not so, I think it's a little bit different and more difficult with purely spiritual, you know, quests.
Well, as I said, I mean, it's been, you know, 9/11 truth, you know, isn't really a forum for discussing, like, you know, spirituality. I mean, obviously, you know, sort of because so much theology and religious talk, it just seems to be some kind of disguised political, you know, political agenda that you know, we end up having to talk about it a lot, you know. But I mean, but you know, the actual, you know, the actual nuts and bolts of, you know, doctrines and comparative religion is sort of like been, it's been covered so thoroughly and so well in other forums and other, you know, other books and, you know, like certain, you know, churches and certain, you know, religious groups of all kinds, you know, they talk about this as a matter of speciality. And, you know, so, you know, it's not something we can really add much to, is what I'm saying.
We can't. And look, on that note, we're going to have to take a break because we're getting Josh Jackson on. And Dan, you are very welcome to stay with the discussion. But if you have to leave, we, you know, we wish you well. I'm just going to pause it right here, and we'll get Josh on. Can you stay on for a bit longer?
I'll see. Always a pleasure. Anyway, I'll see you.
Okay, okay, we'll just pause for a short break and some music. Cheers.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to ground control. I'm stepping through the door, and I'm floating in a most peculiar way, and the stars look very different today. For here am I sitting in a tin can. Nothing I can do.
Josh, welcome back.
Ground control to Peeping Tom.
Indeed, indeed. The theme tonight is, it's a theme where really it's a theme that has no clear defined boundaries at all. It's truth, but it's truth without a capital T, and it's certainly truth without anything before that word. And as to what comes after that word, well, it's pretty much whatever you think is truth. And that seems to be what we found from looking at the New Truth Movement and the New Truth Movement Australia website, is like what they're saying is the truth is what you see as truth, and it's up to you to find that truth. So it's more now, it's in a journey of spiritual dimensions. Don't let me dominate this conversation. What do you think, Josh? What is truth for you?
Well, look, I've been an advocate of 9/11 truth for a long time, since probably 2002.
Okay.
And to me, 9/11 truth is so important because it uses the best thing that us humans have got right now, which is the scientific method. We don't have anything better, and if we do, please tell us. But at the moment, the scientific method is the only way to truth that we have. Now, the 9/11 truth movement, to me, uses the scientific method. The hardcore truthers use the scientific method, and they write papers, they write theses. These are hundreds of architects, engineers, physicists, some of these groups in the thousands. Now, when I look at the melting point of steel and the physics and the mathematical modeling, this is hardcore science. It is not theories. And when I talk to someone about 9/11 truth, straight off the bat, straight away they go, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. So,
and this isn't true. I mean, I don't consider myself a conspiracy theorist. I've never really been into them. I've never, what I have been into is when someone shows me some scientific truths, I sit there stumped and I try to find a way around it. I say, no, surely, hang on, let me do some more research. Let me try to, conquer your theory, your scientific theory. And lo and behold, for the last 6 years, I haven't been able to. And I've read, the popular mechanics or the debunking papers, and none of them scratch the surface. They tickle a few bits here and there, and it's like, yep, okay, well, we got that wrong, and we go back and we look at that as true science does. Now, that to me is truth. If someone can show me truth of, that every day there's hundreds of millions of aliens coming down and seeing us and all this stuff, no worries. Give us the facts. Show me.
It's interesting because
facts.
Earlier we played a short excerpt from a man who claims exactly just what you say, and he does it with an absolute straight face and in a very matter of fact way. He describes attending a conference in New Mexico where there were 10 aliens present, from different galaxies. One was from the Orion, one was from some other galaxy. And several of them were in special machines that allowed them to breathe because they wouldn't be able to breathe our atmosphere. And he was, quite meticulous about describing the machines that they were in. Of course, you have to trust him, because there's no other evidence other than him telling you that. But he did look very, very sincere. But the curious thing about it is if you watch that video, the Dan Burish interview of Project Camelot, a name which does come up in 9/11 research, unfortunately, I have to say that, because there are associations with some 9/11 people in this group known as Project Camelot. Anyway, I'm digressing. But what I'm trying to say here is that in his story, he goes into this story about facts. But later on in the story, he actually goes into what really seems almost like a psychotherapy session. He's talking about his emotional issues as a child. And then this is part of his alien experience, though. And this is a very common theme with alien abduction. It's part of some theme of personal development,
feelings of like, you know, loneliness. And then, of course, you get abducted, you get taken up to the spaceship, they do experiments on you, you come back, and your parents can't protect you. And he describes how his grandfather wanted to protect him, but his parents didn't. And it's very interesting. Yeah, look,
and then, folks, honestly, let me set it straight for where I sit in this, right?
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that there are aliens. I mean, you would have to be so naive and ridiculously docile and thick to not really realize that there's other life forms apart from us. I mean, the space is so vast, so ridiculously vast.
Yeah.
It's absolute impossible not to be other life forms. For us to be the only miraculous thing that, you know, I mean, it's absurd. We don't even know how far space goes. I mean, really, it's stupid to say that there's no such thing as alien life. What I'm saying, though, is that, A, it doesn't affect my life. So people are passionate about it, right? But you could say,
well, it affects your life if you think it affects your life, you see. It's one of those concepts like, does it affect my life? Well, the people who are concerned about UFOs feel it affects their life. And, you know, certainly the ones that claim they were abducted, you know, they're claiming it really affected their life. We're really at sea here, you know, discussing what we're discussing. There's nothing firm. We have no firm foundations upon which to assert. But what I have been talking to Dan about earlier was the system of logic. And we were talking about the Sherlock Holmes method, you know, of basically ruling things out. And you eventually rule everything out and you end up with what must have really happened. And as Dan has instructed me, this was actually derived from John Stuart Mill's system of logic and one of the main reasons behind the creation of Sherlock Holmes. Is that correct, Dan?
Well, yeah, essentially. I mean, he was trying to popularize this, method of, you know, this method that Mill developed. It was sort of it's nothing essentially new from Aristotle, but he just had a nice, you know, he had a very nice way of putting it. That's all.
And so the question, as you put it, Josh, was, you know, the point of view you put it, well, it doesn't affect my life. Some people do. That is a variable. You know, some people would say it affects my life. Some people would say it doesn't.
Oh, geez. Look, if I got probed in the backside by an alien and I truly believed it, I'd be screaming from the top of every mountain, man. Like, I would be, you know, and people would call me mad and all this, right? But I would, and I'd be totally frightened, you know, and you know, what can you do? But
I'm a probe, buddy.
I really feel for those people who believe that's happened to them. I mean, whether it's true or not, some of these people believe it so strongly that it doesn't matter if it happened for real or not. It's affected their lives so strongly.
Yeah.
And it's really quite sad. You know, it's awful. It's an awful story. But saying that, in terms of the truth movement, I really want to urge all 9/11 truthers to continue branding 9/11 truth as 9/11 truth. Not I'm a truther or I'm part of the truth movement. I'm part of the 9/11 truth movement. I'm
an 9/11 truth activist. That's an interesting point. I mean, I've done it. I've used that terminology, truther, on its own. You know, I think many people have.
I have too. Yeah.
Yeah. It ends up becoming something that sounds a little bit like a religion, doesn't it? Although it's something that's a religion that has no definite kind of creed or anything, because the religion seems to be the truth is whatever is true for you. So it could be aliens, it could be chemtrails, it could be HAARP, it could be, a purely spiritual journey of self-discovery and self-realization. It could be a traditional religion of some kind, although you don't get too much of that. Oddly, you don't. You get the extreme atheist point of view as well. You get the zeitgeist people and the people who basically say all religion is wrong, but believe our utopian cult. You know, all religion is wrong, but here's the real religion, you know. The Zeitgeist, Zed Day. We're all going to put on our little Zed hats on Zed Day and all march for Zeitgeist Day, you know. It's like, okay. So, but oddly, you don't get in this, what this new kind of truth thing, you don't seem to get Christians in it. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just an observation. It doesn't seem to have traditional religion in it. It doesn't have, you know, Islam, Christianity or Buddhism in it.
Which one? The 9/11 truth movement, or the?
Well, again, I'm just flopping around in an ocean here meaninglessness. I don't even know what it is. All I know is that when people, the chatter that I've heard doesn't seem to include that.
No, and you know, you could quite easily go into the realms of this is a government conspiracy to sort of confuse people and what is the truth? The truth is, you know, look, at the end of the day, there's so many weird and wonderful people in this world, and that's what makes this world great. But we need to constantly check ourselves to not confuse. The reason why I think, Harold, you've brought this topic up is because when 9/11 truth, it's always happening. When mainstream media hit 9/11 truth, they go after the wackiest people. And you see some crazy guy with a crazy hat ranting to himself, and then Joe Blogg, 9/11 truther, also believes that George Bush is a lizard.
Yeah.
And that then straight away, every hardworking physicist, architect, engineer also gets smeared with that same brush.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's very, very, very dangerous for that hard work of these people. I mean, these people have put their lives, ladies and gentlemen. These people have put 6 to 7 years into discovering the truth of 9/11. And for you to go, but I believe in aliens and everything is truth and we should be... I believe in, you know, HAARP brought down, and I believe this and that. And it doesn't matter what you believe. I want evidence. We want evidence. We want hard mathematical and empirical evidence. Sorry.
Yes. I fully concur from my point of view that we need. Well, we need to have guidelines. You know, and, you know, one of those guidelines is an empirical scientific approach to matters that are physical, you know, theories about, say, how the towers collapsed. Unless you approach that on an empirical scientific basis, then it's sort of pointless, because you're talking about a physical, you're saying the physical fact is we're saying that these buildings were blown up. So you've got to present physical evidence.
Absolutely.
You can't just say, I dreamt it. I had a vision. You know, you couldn't say that. That wouldn't work. You know, that wouldn't stand up in court. And you can't sort of just talk about that you had a conversation with some secret person who no one else can ever know, who told you something. Because that, again, can never be tested. That's like the UFO guy, you know. Oh, you know, I was with the aliens at a conference and they told me all these things. Believe me. Trust me.
Yeah.
Again, it has to be something that we can all apply some tests to. And this is what Stephen Jones has done. He took some dust, you know, and he put it under the microscope. And anyone who's got a microscope, you can take that dust and do the same experiment. Okay. Yeah. That's called reproducibility, one of the most important things in a scientific investigation.
And folks, like, I don't write off David Icke with his theories. I really don't. And I don't write off anyone with their theories.
That's very broad-minded of you. Cheers. Yeah.
You know, but I just warn everybody that 9/11 truth is a very, very important subject to expose. And we cannot dilute it with stuff that is so, it is just not scientifically provable, you know. I mean, it really is all about empirical evidence, and we need to Well, always think about that.
And this problem becomes quite acute when, for example, you run a forum where you're trying to you've set up a forum with certain goals in mind, okay, and you're trying to break through the media blockade on investigating 9/11, and then you get a lot of people who want to join that forum to share their like their UFO photo, you know, oh hey, I found, you know, I took a photo and there was this blob in it and it looks like a UFO. Hey, isn't that amazing? You know, and it's just a photo of something with a blob in it, you know, and you go, well, it's not, you know, to me, I don't think that's really that amazing, you know, we have a website that has a discussion area, and it's not just for 9/11. It is for other things, you know, because we want to share news stories and stuff as well. And 9/11 is such a huge topic. It's not as if 9/11 is a very narrow topic. 9/11 includes physics, but it also includes politics. It includes the money system. It includes global agenda. It includes globalism. It brings in so many different areas. You've got to allow many different themes just to deal with it. But when a discussion group starts getting kind of infiltrated, and I don't mean that in a conspiratorial manner, I just mean like infiltrated by themes that sort of are woolly or you know, sort of vaguely vague and not connected to empirical testable realities, and that they start to mount up. And, you know, you get someone posting their UFO photos. You get someone posting, you know, symbols of the Illuminati that they see everywhere. You know, they look up and they see some triangle on a building and they think, oh, my God, it's an Illuminati symbol. I'll put that we'll talk about that.
Isn't it amazing that the alphabet starts with an A, which is a triangle?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the whole alphabet is just Illuminati. Like,
And then you get someone taking a shot, you know, a photograph of a plane that has a white trail behind it, you know. And then you get endless photographs of planes with white trails behind them. And it just goes on and on, you know. And of course, you get all the other discussions that seem a bit more orchestrated and sinister, where the ones that talk about the no planes at the World Trade Center, which we think may be a deliberate disinfo campaign, we don't know. The no plane people come on, and they won't listen to any form of debate. They just keep saying the same thing over and over again, and they post.
Oh mate, it's like screaming down a well in Elvish. No one comes back to you with anything, you know. Yeah, you just can't get through to these people.
Some of the major forums and sites have really just, you know, established rules that they don't allow certain topics. You know, 9/11 Blogger is a very excellent site, and you know they won't get stuff about UFOs on there, and you also won't get stuff about Holocaust denial on there as well. And you know, they're not against free speech. I'm sure that the people who run 9/11 Blogger think that we should be at least allowed to ask questions without being thrown in jail, you know, like they do in Europe. If you question the Holocaust, they throw you in jail. Well, that's a bit ridiculous. Okay. But at the same time, they don't want people coming on their site carrying on about the Holocaust and the Jews. And it's a very messy, controversial topic.
No, it makes me sick, mate. I go into Alex Jones's forum, like just the comments, and it's just constantly Jew bashing, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's just sickening, you know, and that it's really dangerous. You know, it's a dangerous form of racism. I mean, what have Jews got to do with anything, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the people pretend to be Jewish at the top or might have Jewish bloodlines or whatever. You don't brand a whole religion, you know. I mean, I think most religions are pretty crackpotty anyway, you know, Jewish and Christian, all of them. Everyone's allowed to believe what they want and all this, but I just think hate speech towards any religion is just sickening.
That's
another topic, but
yeah, indeed. I mean, but on the point of bloodlines, this is interesting. You pointed that out because this is one of the things that comes up in David Icke's talks a lot, and it's actually one of the ones that I actually, rather than the discussion of lizards and stuff, which doesn't come up much, he doesn't talk about anymore. But he does talk a lot about the bloodlines, and I see this as another one of the kind of dangerous themes, because a lot of people infer that he's talking about Jews when he talks about these bloodlines. A lot of people, some groups have chosen to interpret his language as code for an anti-Semitic view. Okay, you may say, well, that's their problem, not his. But with the bloodline idea that he proposes, you know, he talks about ancient Babylon. He talks about some rulers of ancient Babylon who were kind of like brought down by, I don't know, they were kicked out, and they spread out across Europe, and they then set up all of these royal families all across Europe, and they became the British royal family, and they now rule the world through the Illuminati, and this is whole set of ideas, which what I've noticed with David Icke's lectures is he'll be just talking about the police state and isn't it terrible, and it'll be all quite, you know, solid stuff that I agree with. Then he'll just immediately, without even, you know, so much as a buy or leave, he'll just slip into this discussion about bloodlines as if we all know that. And I, you know, I don't know that to be true. And I mean, I would like to have, you know, a university course that I could do to know that this is based on some real research rather than someone just telling it to me. I mean, because I did study, you know, a bit of prehistory and ancient history, archaeology and stuff. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that there's nothing in the academic literature that can confirm what David Icke is saying there. He's referring to a conspiracy.
I mean, he's English and he's buying into the, for many centuries, the English, like the English nobility, did invent for themselves these fantastic genealogies.
The genealogy is going back, yeah.
King David, you know, and it's all part of developing this, you know, divine right of kings.
Yeah.
They did, that's right. A lot of these are lies built just to make themselves look good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's buying into that, you know, because, you know, it's so much part of English tradition, you know. Going back to, you know, William the First and then, you know,
The fact of the matter is, sorry to interrupt there.
Right, go right ahead.
But what we're seeing here is if someone gets born into these families, whether they're blood or not, right, they get taught the same shit. Sorry, excuse my language. They get taught the same stuff. And this is, you know, you're better than everyone else. These people, you own the world, you can do whatever you want, these people are plebs, you're better, you're much better than everyone else. And that's how people in the elite circles grow. You can look at standard television, like Laddits to Ladies, and these sort of, posh, and a lot of it is about sort of, such a commoner, and all this sort of, yeah, rhetoric towards the common man, and they get taught this from a very early age to have hatred towards other people that aren't privileged. And so it doesn't matter whether you're in the bloodline, if you're truly blood or not, you know, child abuse is the true evil there, and you know, whether you truly are the son of, you know, the great 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 grandfather of George the bloody fifth or whatever, it really doesn't matter.
I think what you're saying is that we can explain these phenomena without resorting to this concept of the evil seed that was sort of in the DNA, whether it was reptilian DNA from another galaxy or whatever it was that then propagated, and it's because of that alien DNA that all this is happening. You know, we can sort of just explain all this without that quite well. We can just look at historical forces, look at the way people behave, look at the way children are brought up, look at the emotional, result in a person's life. And to me, you see, that again is it's the difference between being scientific in the broadest sense, you know, and being kind of drifting into emotive. Because it's very emotive, and it's very there's something satisfying to some part of our brain when we start proposing grand metaphysical conspiracy theories. I think we really do find it satisfying in some way, but I think it also just damages our ability to think. Because as soon as you start to go into that method, it becomes, and I say this with all due respect to Christianity. Well, I was actually going to say it becomes a little bit like the Christians who refer to biblical prophecy and just see everything in terms of biblical prophecy and their interpretation of that. And then they say, well, you know, the revelation is at hand, you know, the day of judgment is coming and there's going to be all these things. And you know, great, because they want it to happen almost, you know, because it fulfills their metaphysical construct of the universe.
Yeah, but I mean,
it doesn't feel very grown up. Sorry, Dan, continue.
No, but that sort of mental process you're talking about isn't unique to Christians. I mean, there's...
Well, that's what I'm pointing out. I'm saying it's...
Dr. Marxists have got a very comfortable world view of the system that explains everything, and you just can't shift them out of it or get them to look at things another way or anything, you know, Hindus or...
Oh, look, statism or religions, they're all the same. They've got this sort of over-the-top view of, you know, without any sort of empirical evidence, it's just sort of fluff that leads them to their ideal, you know, what they believe.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are traps that one could fall into, even in regard to what we might call empirical evidence. You know, you could say, well, you know, I mean, empirical means by experience, you know, that you experienced it to be so. But you could experience something to be so and be completely deluded, you know. And so your empirical evidence might differ to my empirical evidence. Now, people can have a spiritual experience and that can be empirically real. They really had it, you know. And a lot of saints and, you know, all kinds of people have spiritual experiences, you know, and that they hear voices and they talk to spirits or, you know, things like that occur to them, occur to their reality. And, you know, sort of like, empirically real for them. Joan of Arc heard voices. Yeah, continue. Yeah.
Well, just Ramanujan, the Indian mathematician, had all, you know, said that he got, and he wrote down some fantastic formulas and some just really wild, interesting ideas, and that just boggled the mind. You know, how did he think of that? And, yeah, and they've been proven to be, a lot of them have been proven to be, you know, like just sound, and some of them have not been. But the fact is, I mean, he claimed to have had these visions in his dreams, and where the lion god, you know, showed him all these formulas and, you know, gave him all this wisdom, you know. So, you know, but, you know, before we die, you know, Srinivasa Ramanujan is one of the great, you know, figures of the 20th century.
And I mean, visions can be incredibly powerful in terms of scientific as well as poetic and artistic and, you know, religious things. Yeah.
I mean, I know an Indian woman who said that, you know, she thought that just religious people just think about things in different ways, you know. You know, it's just a different way of thinking about things. But
we know that Isaac Newton was a very religious man, and yet, as well as being a very religious man, he created the foundation of the most important physical scientific principles that we rely on. You know, the Newton's laws of motion. Okay, and yet he was a very religious man. So I think we need to realize that, because there's also this other danger where people get obsessed with believing all religion is wrong, all religion is crazy, and then they become the zeitgeist people, you know. Who's like, oh, religion's all crazy, but, you know, but follow our zeitgeist truth, our new utopian vision. And, you know, there's been a lot of atheistic ideas like that people have upheld, which then become another thing to believe in. And they think they're very proud of themselves for throwing away their childish beliefs, you know, their childish religious beliefs. And then they embrace this new, great, shining truth. And, you know, that pretty much was what Marxism became in its, you know, in the Soviet Union. And then we had this atheistic authoritarian state that was responsible for, you know, murdering countless millions of people and
just the same with China.
Doing most horrendous things, you know.
Yeah, but
free from religion, free from the terrible, you know, trappings of religion. Yeah.
I mean, they compete, right? I mean, states and religions compete for people's faith.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely going off the topic.
Well, look, we started off really without much guideline, and you know, this show, as I said, because we are trying to grapple with a reality. You know, the show isn't being done on this topic just for fun. There is a truth movement, supposedly, and there is this. I've actually been getting, you know, like communications from people and stuff wanting to know why, for example, we don't in the 9/11 truth group that we have, the 9/11 Oz and stuff like that, you know, why don't we allow more freedom of expression? Why do we clamp it down? You know, the argument is like, well, that's not good, you see, because you've got to be open. And this is about allowing people to express and, you know, you mustn't censor, you mustn't control, because if you do, you'll miss things that are really important, and you'll alienate people, and you'll do all these things. So, and you know, we see a lot of people turning to a variety of kind of new age ideas, looking for truth, you know, as
an abstract.
Yeah,
and that's all good stuff. But yeah, these people have got to realize that you are not the government. You don't rule over them.
Yeah,
But this is your website. If you don't want those topics, you can kick them off. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the World Wide Web. If you don't like Herowood censoring your perceptions, you can scream it at the top of your lungs on your own website.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't like to say, you know, it's me personally wanting to censor it.
But if you deem, you know, something,
I have,
be,
yeah,
you know, not worthy or destructive, or you know, just find it offensive or whatever, you know, you have the right to delete it. And now that's different than a government censoring all input from the internet.
Well, can I just make the point that we do actually have a pretty sort of loose policy at 911 Oz of just no censorship, like.
Yeah, well, Dan is a co-administrator of that forum, and continue, Dan.
Well, it's just we don't really censor things. If something's off topic, we just sort of put it in the pit. And
yeah, it's interesting, you know, and we did that, and we thought, wow, we've really solved it. We can just put anything that's problematic or controversial in the pit. But then a lot of people have complained that, oh, the pit is this terrible place, you know, you shouldn't have it.
Well,
you know, oh, that horrible place, you know. And so, you know, the people, and like some people know they belong in the pit. You know, we have had one or two that accepted being in there, but a lot of people get really shocked that you put what they've said in the pit, because you're soiling them. You know, it's like you're like that. They think they're saying some wonderfully important thing, and you've said, well, we think that belongs in the pit, and they go, how dare you? You know, they get really upset.
this is the fighting pit. Right?
Yeah, we called it the fighting. I mean, look, It's not a huge deal. I mean, you know, a forum is just a place to share some information. I don't see it as being anything to be overly concerned about in itself. It's a meeting point if people want to share some information. I've personally got a lot of other things that I want to get on with, and I'm not even, you know, that concerned about it. You know, like,
yeah.
I want to continue doing this radio show. And we've got other things that we're doing with We Are Change, which are going to be involved in getting out there, talking to the people, you know, and showing films. From a certain point of view, places like forums become a community. And,
yeah.
You know, that's maybe not, I think with our group, it's not so much a community, and it's pretty quiet at the moment on that forum. I think a lot of people have some of the people that wanted to share all of their stuff weren't allowed to, so a lot of them have gone away. So
This is another. This is, I guess, why you also wanted to bring this topic up, Harold, is that to bring on to in a marketability, as crazy as that sounds, of the truth movement of 9/11, by suppressing people's views on. You know, strange strange and weird and wonderful conspiratorial theories,
yes,
you are actually also driving them away from the 9/11 truth movement as a whole.
Yes, but, you can argue that.
You know, even though they have great things to offer and are energetic and want to get out there and tell people about the melting point of steel and look at this and look at that and look at the puffs of smoke and but they tend to come along to the and start pushing alien stories as well. Now, what do you do? You know, do you, you know, what do you do? I don't know.
we don't know. And again, this show has not been about solutions. I do apologize. It's probably very frustrating to listen to, as it has been frustrating to deliver it. And you know, we're not going to continue on this theme. We're going to move on to all the really cutting edge stuff that we like to talk about. For this week, we've dwelled in this. We may get a response, and I'm going to ask for a response from the webmaster of Truth Movement Australia, if he'd like to come on and talk to us about his view, because I do think dialogue is always valuable. You know, real people in the real world telling you what they think. You know, and
absolutely.
If we can get a response from Adam Davis, who runs that site, you know, all well and good. That'd be terrific. Otherwise, you know, we'll move on. And you know, we've attempted here to sort of address where we stand on this question of what is truth, what is empirical truth, what is worth investigating, what needs to be shelved, what has to be kind of like blocked out of some discussion forums. Dan, do you want to cap that off?
Yeah, well, we're going ahead with them. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, it'd be nice to have some dialogue. I think, you know, the guy who runs TMA is young, and a lot of young people are just feeling their way, and you know, sort of, you know, in the way in, you know, epistemology and ontology and all those sort of, you know, theory of knowledge things. So I'm actually not too fussed about it. Yeah, we're getting ahead, going on with some our stuff. Yeah, we are changing that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, we've got some really important interviews lined up for the next few months, actually. Today I had a conversation with the guy who runs an anti-GMO group in Melbourne, and I'm going to be getting him on the show to talk about the anti-GMO movement in Australia, and that will be a precursor to the screening of the amazing film The World According to Monsanto, which we're going to do in May. I was looking at April, but we're going to need more time. And he needs more time as well to get our information out to his mailing lists. But we're going to have an interview there. We're going to be talking to the participants of the 9/11 conference later in this year. We're going to get each person who's coming on the show. So that'll include people like Richard Gage and Stephen Jones and various people like that. We're going to be covering some ground, you know, we're going to be going back to some ground we covered last year. I want to speak to Meryl Dory from the vaccination group again. We may go back to talk to the free energy people again.
Yeah, Ashworth Palace, yeah. Fantastic guy.
And we'll try to also cover the global warming, climate change issue and get some spokespersons on there from the other side of the fence, from the government's position. A lot of developments there, you know, some just really amazing information out there about the weakness of the government's position. And the government is really struggling with the emissions trading scheme at the moment. Their chance of getting it through is about nil at the moment. So that's a
good,
that's a plus. So I think we'll get some good interviews on that subject. You know, and we'll just continue looking at what's happening in the real, you know, known world.
I just had a thought. Maybe instead of this show being called Truth News, maybe we could call it Epistemological News.
Yeah, that's an excellent an excellent way to round it off. Look, I think we might round off the show tonight with that. As always, you know, please contact us with your comments, because especially on a show like this, which is kind of an opinion hour, you know, please join in the discussion on the comments, and you know, we'll come back to this to address questions. Certainly.
Cheers.
Cheers, Josh. Cheers, Dan Collins, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Matt.